Blog Talk Radio.
Conversation, and we
find our mindset changes when it comes to talking about race. Race is very important to African Americans. I can't speak for any other race, but I can speak for our race. Race is very important when it comes to us, because it seems to be, it's as though our race is the only race that's defined by its color. And let me say that again. Our race seems to be the only race that's defined by its color. And everybody else can be whatever, but when it comes to African Americans, we're judged on our race and not for who we are. We're judged by our visual or physical attributes opposed to our knowledge and how we handle situations. And it's bad, it's that way, but that's how it is. That's reality. So we want to know who created imbalance in America. Who created the drama? Who created all this ugliness when it comes to African Americans? We can talk about history, and we can talk about how history has, in a sense, hurt us, opposed to helping us. We could talk about how we've allowed, because I think a lot of this could have been prevented if we spoke up more. And you know, we left the burden on, how do you say that? We left this heavy burden on people like Martin Luther King, Marcus Garvey, Malcolm X. We rode on their coattails, to get where we're at. And that's what we find is our foundation, because we were not ready, or we were not able, or we were not prepared mentally, emotionally, physically to take on the journey or the burden of fighting for your people, fighting for yourself. So it's kind of scary when you think about the ideal that these people, excuse me, let me let this person in. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Can you hear me? Yes. Can you hear me?
I can barely hear you. I'm sorry. I can barely hear you. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Hi. Turn down your computer a little bit because I can hear feedback.
Yeah, let me turn my speaker down. Maybe that'll help.
Okay.
Yeah, how the sound is. Is it okay now?
Now, can you hear me, Chris?
I think you said something. This is Henty. Now you asked me to call in.
Yeah.
I think you said something at the very beginning that I have to understand, basically, that some races, some people have had a problem with baseball longer than when it came to us. Some people are inherent with their degree of prejudice, and it's ethnic. And I'm speaking particularly about Indians. But when it comes to our situation, we have to go back to Johann Blumenbach and his science of making the Caucasian race at the top of the race, and then casting and making categories for all races after that. And I think it was a trifecta of slavery along with religion that was used to certify it, justify it by no. Look at this. See, all these things were a trifecta, as well as the gun trade, as well as gun trade with Great Britain. And from that point on, henceforth, we've had a problem with race. Our ethnicity was not a problem at the very beginning. It became a problem later on, and it became a justification for everything that we see now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that you can not talk about race, and some people will get heated about it. It's a topic and it's a subject that there will always be two sides, and people are going to have their sides and things like that. But it has to be talked about. It has to be discussed. It doesn't have to be talked about with bigotry. If people can be intelligent about it and really have a discussion about it. But right now, what seems to be happening or occurring is that we're dealing with race because we have to deal with people who are basically able to move ahead. This whole incident recently with Snowden, who worked for the state briefly, who had no high school diploma, who had no college degree. He still works for the CIA in terms of works around and gets a six-figure job, making $120,000 a year. And we have to wonder, how does somebody with little background, little education, who's able to move from being in the military to getting into a position like that, and wonder about basically our problem, which is currently racial entitlement. This continues to go on. There are different protocols based on who you are. Some races have been deemed artificially white in some ways. They're not us because their skin is pale, or because of their ethnic background versus us.
Yeah.
So we have
go ahead. No, I was just going to say, excuse me, I'm sorry to interrupt you. You said something that was very validated when you were talking about Snowden having a high school education. Now, do you think that white people understand that they have a natural shoo-in when it comes to certain situations? Do you think that they understand and recognize?
I can't speak to them because I'm not one of them, but I will say that for some, the liberals will probably say they agree. And then the conservatives, of course, will certifiably say that's not true at all. I think it's just a matter of who you respond and who you speak to. But I don't think that there many people will acknowledge that. But there are liberals out there who I know who will agree. And I know that there are conservatives out there who say, well, they'll make an excuse for it. Maybe he has computer skills. Any excuse will do other than the obvious unknowing truth about the whole thing, or at least the only thing that we can fall back on. When all else is improbable, then we have to deal with what is more than likely probable. You know, I don't see how a young black man could actually move into a position with only a high school diploma, then be able to work with no high school diploma, go into the military, get an honorable discharge, work for the day, and then turn around and work for a Boone's Island. I just don't see it. I don't see it. I can't quantify it. It's almost like it's such a jump. And most of our students and our young people, as well as older people, are going back to school just so that they can try to get past that, you know. So there's a difference when it comes to resumes between who's who. The question is, how do you deal with that? You can try to legislate it all you want, but for the end of the day, these things come to light, you know, and we have to deal with it. We have to deal with how come two people of different races with the same background can go inside of a Nissan dealership, apply for a car loan, and then have two different interest rates based solely upon race. We have to deal with mortgages, and how come, you know, some people, same potential, same background, same jobs, can go in and get two different credit ratings based upon race. So So there is a degree of racial entitlement that people don't deal with. And I think that, in all honesty, our biggest issue with everybody is right now is that we're reactionary to it. And sometimes I don't think we even react to it. I think, you know,
We don't. We just sit back. But you know why? Do you understand why? Because it's the norm.
Yeah, I think our problem is that I will say this, and I think that our people in the past were smarter than us. They had no choice but to be.
Mm-hmm.
They were more communal because they had no choice but to be. Segregation required it. So they worked together. I don't know if you've seen some of my posts on Facebook, but I was speaking about Rosa Parks and the incident that happened before her. I forgot the young lady's name that was incident before Rosa Parks, who had done the same thing maybe 6 months, 3 years prior. But at that time, and whether it's people like her or not, the NAACP, if they used some degree of Machiavellian intelligence to take advantage of the situation, to create the bus boycott, then it was a smart thing to do. Versus now, they were proactive. Versus now, where we're our places, we, to some degree, I believe, we accept our white people. You know, we live with it. We accept it. We just want to find our niche in it. And then most of us just want to go to our homes and drive our fancy cars. And then we think what we're doing is living the American dream. So I think that's what the biggest problem is with us right now. Until we maybe lose a little bit more, or until we realize basically what is really going on now, you know, or until we start really doing the math, you know, maybe somewhere along the line we might wake up. I don't know. I don't know if we ever. I have no idea.
But I hate to be so
pessimistic in that way, but that's just my personal take, though.
Yeah, and you're right with that, and it's to a certain extent, and maybe people probably don't feel the same way I do. I'm kind of scared in a sense, and I can truthfully say that. I'm afraid that because we don't address the issues, and not to say that we just don't address them. You have people who address them, but in the meantime, while they're addressing them, there's repercussions to them addressing them, and then they become ostracized by the others by being called troublemakers. I deal with that. If you know Brian Coleman, me and him, we are on a show together here locally in this area, and we're definitely always fighting. We have our capes on, and we're always fighting and exposing the injustices when it comes to African Americans. And we were considered troublemakers. Now, we weren't called troublemakers from the white people. We were called troublemakers from our own.
That's right. That's absolutely right. You will find that people don't like the truth. People don't want to hear the truth. They'd rather cover their heads about it. You know, I'm not needing to.
Or don't mess this up for me.
Don't mess it up for me. I don't want to lose my job. And unfortunately, that's the pitfall that we live in right now. We're so content, and when segregation, we had to be communal. With what we call supposedly integration, we became individualistic, and now it's about me. It's about you know, my comfort. And unfortunately, you know, the only way people really become, I believe, for, you know, not to say that everybody's going to become militant or not, but I would say that I'm not looking to say that anybody should become militant. I'm just saying that once your comfort zone is gone, then you will begin to respond. You will have to act. You will get involved because now your comfort zone is gone. Now you're uncomfortable. You're losing, you're not making, you know, you lost your vehicle, you lost your car, you lost your home, and maybe you realize what's going on around you, and maybe there's an obsolescence, I don't know, and I don't have an answer to it all. If I was, we wouldn't be in the position that we were, but I tell you that the biggest problem that we have right now is that many of us just become complacent. And we accept white supremacy. We do. We do. We don't do anything about it until something happens and occurs. I don't think, you know, one of the biggest problems I have with everything that we do now is that, you know, if MLK or Malcolm X were here, you know, Martin Luther King definitely, he said he had a dream. However, who said that, you know, you were supposed to stop fighting? Who said that you were supposed to become complacent? Who said that you were supposed to sit there and do nothing? You know, and right now, that's just what it seems to be. You know, we prefer to just have our little crumbs, and we accept that, and that's okay. No. But right now, that's what seems to be the problem. A lot of us are just willing to say, you know, hey, well, we're not, you know, we don't want to cause no trouble. And the sad part is that perhaps you and I can't remember the other gentleman that you're speaking about.
Mr. Cohen.
One day, the sad part is that you're not appreciated until you're gone. That's the saddest part. You're never appreciated. I can remember some speeches by Jesse Jackson, Reverend Jesse Jackson, on people who turned against the Martin Luther King churches who wouldn't allow him to preach. Everybody who asked him to turn against them, and those who turned against Malcolm X, for example. Same thing. And you never appreciate it until you're gone. You never appreciate it, you know, while you're living. You're like a painting. You have to wait for your value to go up. You know, when you go up, you're gone.
I think that being appreciated is not really important. I was talking to Mr. Coleman's dad, and he was saying, you know, you guys might not benefit for the changes that you guys are trying to make, but you might be able to live to see the benefits that others are going to be able to partake in because of the changes that you guys are attempting to make. And it's hard, but another thing, too, when you talk about racism, I think, too, a lot of people are in shock. And when I say that, let me explain it. I think a lot of our people are in shock when it comes to the idea that our president, for one thing, he's African-American half, whatever. But we thought when we put him or helped attempt to put him in office, we thought not all of our troubles were going to be doused, but at least some of them. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people are in shock that, man, when are we going to get a break? Everybody else is getting a break, but we're not. What is going on? And I think that type of shock can turn into anger, and that's when it gets dangerous. Instead of it being shocked, okay, I'm shocked at this, so now I need to see what I can do to fix this. But instead, what happens is we get shocked, and now we're angry because we're tired. We're tired, and I think that's the resounding alarm that's going off across the nation is African Americans are tired. They're tired of being the lowest on the totem pole. They're tired of being beat out of jobs. They're tired of just being beat down in every aspect of their lives, and they're just trying to survive.
I would say that, in all honesty, the overwhelming majority, even myself included, in the initial first term, wanted to see history made, and hopefully that change would happen. And I'll be the first to admit that. That was my take upon things. I even was even defended some of the first decisions, and then I began to realize that no, more of the same. Much of the same. There have been some degrees of improvement. I won't say that he has totally done nothing at all, but there's a lot more that could have been done. I would bring up I think it's 187 million, if I'm not mistaken, but to comparison to black farmers, it's roughly $50,000 a black farmer. Maybe it's based upon my estimates there. That law was passed for black and Indian farmers who received discrimination from the Department of Agriculture. I think it's 187 million, if I'm not mistaken, it might be more. But the biggest single incident is that even with, I mean, the marijuana, I mean, even with the black president in there, that we have to realize that racism is a systemic problem. It's not just one head of the United States being black that's going to change anything. We're dealing with racism as legislative, judicial, and law enforcement.
Exactly.
On the fourth level in most states.
Yeah, and every aspect of whatever we have to deal with, the government, everything, has been, tainted when it comes to us. I want to welcome, let's see if I can say this, Ashina Luka Chakalulu. I can't even say it. I'm sorry, you guys. But this person made a comment in the chat room. She said, the illusion of inclusive has created a mentality of black Americans which has black people protecting their personal interests over the best interests of the black community. So we've become individualized opposed to helping each other, coming together. And I want to say hi to Dino Dean from the Dino Dean Show here on Blog Talk. I want to welcome him. He has a great show. Comes on Sundays at 5 o'clock here on Blog Talk Radio. Love it. I kind of connect with that. That's what's happened. I want to protect what is mine. I don't want nobody to mess with what I got. I want them to mess it up. And I think you kind of preluded to that earlier about how we become, I don't want to get involved. I don't want this to be on me, you know. And we have to stop that because back in the day, it wasn't like that. We came together. Okay, we worked hard together to make the things happen, despite what the white man was doing to us. We worked together. Mm-hmm. And I think society has been able to make a way of dividing us in the sense where we cannot come together. And it's hard. No, I'm not going to say we cannot come together. We have conditioned in our mind that we don't need to work together. We have the upper echelon, the high middle class blacks, you have the poor blacks, and then you got the upper crust, what we call the upper crust blacks. And the upper crust blacks starts to look down on the middle class, and the middle class starts to look down on the lower class. So there's no way we're helping each other by being that way. But division is what America has been doing for years and years and years, is dividing people so that they can do what they do, divide and conquer. And that's basically what's happened to the African American community. Because it's the ideal that we could have at one time, even with all the mess that's going on, we could have come together and made a difference. Not to say that we still can't, but I think we're at a crucial stage now. And like I said before, I see something brewing in the mist. I see people being frustrated, tired, and to me, since President Obama has been in office, it's like it's gotten worse. And I don't know if everybody can see that, but it just seems like it's gotten worse with how we're being treated. It's blatant. I don't want to really talk about the Paula Deen thing because, like I told everyone, I'm not surprised. I deal with it here in Louisiana. I'm not surprised at how these people, you know, people, oh, my God, I cannot believe. No, that's how they really, truly think.
Right. And they don't want to go to that. So, yeah. I think, I want to bring a little bit of balance. I want to say that when it comes to the presence, we know that the balance of power is actually between Congress and the Senate. I think purposely that there has been a substantial need to disenfranchise the public before we be mindful of being used against one another. Just be very mindful of how politics and tricks of politics can be used to undermine anyone. I want to hold him accountable President Obama accountable for quite a few things, no doubt about that. However, I'm also cognitive of how legislation can be used to damper in such a way, almost what we, I don't get into conspiracy theories or anything like that, but I understand how when they use economic ploys to make people turn against people, to make people angry with people, stuff like that. So I want to be careful about that because I know how those things work too. So just like the fact I can look on TV sometimes when I look in action, I can see how when they talk about when they do an economic sanction, that sounds nice and sounds fine, sounds humane, and it's not at all. How dangerous the economic sanction is. And in some ways, I believe that there's been economic sanction against us here too, if not just black people, but people as a whole. I'm sure that some people are making more money than others, but they're not making the money that they used to. So that income gap has definitely changed and everything. So I'm going to be very careful of my understanding. I think that, you know, honestly, in my opinion, there's been economic sanction against us here too. It's just the way legislation is used in order to do it. Some people can feel it more than others. I'm sure that if you're the lower end of the totem pole, you're too busy trying to figure out where your next meal is, let alone to think about a higher cause or anything else for that matter, because right now you're too busy surviving to really think, and that's not a good thing, you know. So I think that's
you're right. It is a very bad situation, and I say this all the time, and this is just one of my little sayings. I tell people all the time, you have to understand, there is a nationwide movement to put us back where we belong. When I say that, people are like, how dare you? It's the truth. You just made a point. You said through legislature, through the way the House and the Senate and these bills that are being passed and these rules and regulations and policies and procedures that's being changed and moved around to fit a whole nother agenda, and we're not paying attention.
It's definitely designed to disenfranchise more people. And right now, I would say that yes, we lose more than anybody else. I think I would say that I think because there's definitely an income gap between blacks, so-called browns, and so-called whites. That there's definitely an income gap, and it's becoming more tremendous, based upon legislation, and it's getting wider and it's getting worse. So I think although we're losing more, I think we're all in a bucket in some ways, but we just happen to be losing more ground than most. And I think that's very dangerous. I think that it's only a matter of time before we see more and more things where people do outlandish acts in order to survive. I think any person, if you take anything way too much from, I don't care if you're middle class, I think the wealthy people jump out of windows or hang themselves while on the middle class side and start doing crime. And you'd just be amazed at what people were willing to do in order to survive. You know, and I think it's dangerous. And I think it's very dangerous. But again, I think, Eric Cantor, Newt Gingrich, these guys doing secret back rooms and meetings in 2012 and said, well, we're gonna find a way to do this and do that, and it's hurting, you know, it's hurting US citizens. Well, they're gonna do it. And then of course I could blame President Obama for many things. But I'm very careful and very mindful also to make sure that I see how legislation is being used too. So I'm not a fan of President Obama. As a matter of fact, I didn't vote at all for him. I didn't vote for anyone because in all honesty I was disenfranchised by all of it. I didn't want to be a hypocrite in this case. That's my take on it right now. That's probably all I could say about it right now, though.
Okay. Aston, I'm going to say Aston because I cannot say his whole name. He says, why be surprised about a slip of the tongue when that slip is the real mentality based on actions of white America? And he was saying white supremacy. It's not that, I don't think there's a surprise. It's just that people were looking for, I don't want to say the word. Lord Savior when they saw, because that's the mentality of some people. They thought that he was going to come in and sweep them off their feet and everything was going to be perfect. And, you know, and these people really thought that way. But when they realized.
Right now, there are a lot of people who thought that. And I knew that was not the case. I knew that was going to be the case. I was just happy to first see what he was going to be able to do and then see more of the same thing. I think that that's what really kind of disenfranchised me about the whole thing, about wars, things like that we're in, and how we maintain this what I call pretrial thing. But that's foreign affairs. But that really concerns me because I believe that we have found our way into making more terrorists than there were before. But that's foreign policy. When it comes to here in the United States, I realize that a lot of jobs and things like that that could have been were purposely blocked were offered from the second from the right with so many strings attached that it was highly improbable that anybody would really go for that. There were more cuts for the rich and the ultra wealthy in the United States than for the average citizens to ensure that they were looking out for their or whoever they were looking for the best interest. So those things again, and then we have sequestration. That just recently took more money off the plate of people who are poor, who are on either fixed incomes or who might be on welfare and things like that. And I feel bad if they have kids now. They have even less to work with than they did before. You know, I'm looking at the filibuster. And again, I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. I'm on the side of common sense. But I looked at the recent filibuster, which allowed the lasting. Student loans, which are doubled from 3.4% to 6.8%. So there are a lot of things that that others have done. Now you're going to be in debt just to get an education. So now you're in debt for, 20 years instead. Now you're going to be in debt maybe for 30 trying to pay it off. Maybe 30 or maybe 40 years trying to pay it off. You got 20% interest on hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, so you're really in debt when you leave school. So I look at the whole picture of everything, and I just see it, and I see that basically it's deleterious to the U.S. citizen, what has been done on Capitol Hill. And unfortunately, like I said, I don't see anyone really getting upset about it or saying anything about it. They just seem to be okay with it as long as they're making a little bit of money, get their little job. But eventually, I think there's broken out to less people left on the line. And that's that we, you know, either we deal with it or we don't. Or you lose everything and then eventually you come back and say, well, maybe you were right about that, you know, years down the road. So that's the biggest concern right now.
Okay.
Hello?
Now, I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, yeah.
Are you? Okay. I'm looking at what Aston said in the chat room. He said he was talking about the slip of the tongue as pertaining to Paula Deen. And he said Barack never made any promises to black people, and black people, because of emotions, didn't demand anything of the first colored press. Okay. You have to understand the mindset of a lot of people who did vote for him. A lot of them were ignorant to the fact that they really thought he was going to save them. See, people don't realize it. People literally really thought that he was going to save them.
Well, let's look at. I grew up. I'm 44 now. I grew up when Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas, they looked at for the Supreme Court, and the whole situation went down. Was Clarence Thomas and his supposed sexual harassment of Anita Hill, and people were, some black folks were upset with Anita Hill for coming forward on Clarence Thomas.
Exactly, they were. They were very angry at her.
They were quite upset. And this is where I thought racialization was just wrong. I thought it was hypocritical. I'd have taken anyone else who was rather, you know, liberal or moderate, something like that, any of those kinds of liberalized judge who still does what's on the law than to accept Clarence Thomas. Because some people say, well, he doesn't think like us, he doesn't respond like us, he doesn't talk like us, but at least he's black. I said, no, that's not enough.
No. No.
Yeah.
And that's sad that we feel. Go ahead.
Yeah, but we racialized it because we wanted somebody who looked like us. And so especially turned around, I mean, blacks turned out in droves because, again, they wanted somebody who looked like us. And there wasn't much of a choice, right? Which is the reason why I didn't vote. I mean, I certainly wasn't voting for Mitt Romney, but I didn't feel any better about President Obama either, you know. But at the same time, we had racialized it, and then we decided that we were going to go ahead and vote for somebody because they colored their skin. And I thought, I said, you know, I was like, well, I like that, but I'd rather have somebody who thinks like I do. You know, that was a big problem. I thought, well, racialization was hypocritical.
I just think now, I think, like I said earlier, I think now the idea that anger is being replaced with, surprise is now in shock, is being replaced with anger because, and we say it, and I'm telling you what people literally said to me. They literally thought that he was going to come in and take this magic wand and everything was going to be perfect when he was finished.
But I think that was rather naive of people who politically, politically naive about the whole thing. Politics doesn't work that way. Again, he's not King Obama. He's President Obama. And his power is balanced and what he can and what he cannot do. And I'm amazed by how his position is well manicured. And they watch every single thing he does. I mean, I'm living in here in D.C., and they're watching every single policy. Every black politician in D.C. Has been watched in D.C. I would say that, so they're watching every single thing that he does. So there's only but so much that you're going to be able to do when you're in there. That's my opinion, but I know that black politicians by the FBI are definitely being watched. So there's so much you're going to be able to do. I'm not making excuses, of course, you know. But I'm just saying this is my skill at taking more things as I sit here in D.C. and watch black politicians getting pretty much outed by the ministry. You know, so,
So I just asked the question, the difference between, in the chat room, I said, what is the difference between racism versus prejudice? Are they considered the same?
Well, racism is definitely a practice. The last word ism. It means to practice something. And I think prejudice is something maybe on a more prejudice maybe over bigotry towards someone. So in other words, it's something that's individualistic. Versus one with some form, but that's my opinion again on that whole thing. I think you're sitting there somewhere regardless of what you do.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm in the chat room and I'm talking. I want people to just keep talking because I'm trying to make sure I'm talking to everybody I need to talk to. Okay.
Sure.
Now, let's do this. Let's take a small break. And, guess what? My co-host just called in. Just a second. Let me see.
Sure. No problem.
Mr. Coleman?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. How are you, sir?
Somebody didn't want me in this evening because my line had been blocked. I've been trying to call ever before the show even started.
Are you serious?
And they just told me again it was no show schedule, and I doubled right back, and it slipped through, I guess. I don't know what happened.
Well, we've been on here for a while now.
I've been trying to call well over half, more than half an hour.
Oh, I apologize for that. Anyway, and I tried to text you because I knew I was on air, and I was texting you. I was like, okay, where are you? Call in. Okay, Mr. Coleman, this is, let me see if I'm saying this. I talk to you all the time on Facebook. Is it Hyman Ault? Is that how you say it?
I'm sorry.
How do you say your name?
You speak to me, ma'am?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Oh, Hipsy Man.
Say that again?
Hipsy Man. H-I-H-E-N-C-I-M-A-N.
Okay.
It's just wordplay. Sorry,
I'm going to call you Mr. H. Oh, Brian, this is Mr. H. Mr. H,
yeah, sorry,
this is
Mr.
co-host
H.
Is Brian.
Okay.
Okay. We were just kind of going back and forth about how we, some of our African Americans had in their mindset that President Obama was going to come in because he's black and put everything together and everything was going to be nice and smooth for African Americans. And the shock is it didn't happen that way, and I think now people are coming out of the shock mode, and now they're angry, and that's my big fear, that the anger is going to get to the point where we're not going to be able to contain it anymore.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people had high expectations. I think where I became skeptical, I just could not believe that a black man could be elected president here, not in this day and time in the United States.
But
I knew something was wrong, but a lot of people felt that, well, you know, his first term, he couldn't do much, but wait till his second term. And I said, okay, but I don't think so. And sure enough, it was just like I predicted. You know, he's just running, you know, somebody else's castle. And we see the end results where we don't even get respect from our own concerning me. Every white president has looked out for his constituents first. We can't even get looked out for. We can't even get looked out in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's true.
So,
that is so true.
So we have to see that this thing he's controlled. I want to believe that he went in with good. He came in this thing wanting to do good, but I think when he went in, he found out it was a different ballgame. That's why I would like to believe that.
Exactly.
I can't say that's the truth, but I would like to believe that.
I believe that. Yeah. Something changed. I have to totally agree with the gentleman. I think. From the Senator Obama, who was the grassroots, seemed to be coming from Chicago, to the President of the United States. There's no doubt that something changed, and I won't make any excuses for it. I still, you know, but I think that I do have there is an advantage to being an informal or an activist, that you're not in a position of power to really make certain rules and decisions, so that we there are certain things that we don't know about. But that, no doubt about it. But something definitely changed. Something certainly definitely changed. Just within 6 months of the presidency, something totally changed. There's some of change. There's some things that maybe that the public doesn't know. I know that there's a fight over resources throughout the world going on, between China and Japan and Russia, everybody's buying stores around the world. And maybe those are the things that we realize that we're not living in a utopian idealist world, that we're living in a world that is quite combative, quite competitive, between stock markets, monetary fund systems, economic systems, as well as the finding of resources to maintain the comfort zone of the average citizen for oil. That just seems to be the driving force behind quite a few of these wars in Iraq, Syria, and Libya. They all have the same thing, that three-letter word, oil, and the need for it. And as long as people don't realize that, you know, what they put in their cars keeps them comfortable, that's where it's coming from. So we continue to fight over resources, and I think that's what maybe there's, you know, that competition thing is what is driving some of quite a few of the things that we get into. I won't make excuses for it, but I think it's all wrong. I mean, I think everybody's wrong for doing it, but this is the world that we live in right now.
Okay, you guys, I'm going to play an excerpt from an interview between Morgan Freeman and Mike Wallace real quick, okay?
Black History Month you find ridiculous.
Why?
You're going to relegate my history to a month? Oh, come on. What do you do with yours? Which month is Black History Month? I'm Jewish. Okay. Which month is Jewish History Month?
There isn't one.
Oh. Oh. Why not?
Yeah.
Do you want one?
No.
I don't either. I don't want a Black History Month. Black history is American history.
How are we going to get rid of racism and
stop talking about it? I'm going to stop calling you a white man. And I'm going to ask you to stop calling me a black man. I know you as Mike Wallace. You know me as Morgan Freeman.
Okay. So, what do you guys think about what he said?
I'm sorry. I do apologize. There was quite a bit of reverb. But if I'm not mistaken, with that Mike Wallace interview, I think it was about why bring up the terminology, why bring up race or something like that, if I'm not mistaken,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah, I remember that. And I will say that, right now Morgan Freeman is in a position where maybe he's idealistic about the whole thing. But we have a lot that we have a lot that needs to be discussed before we can get to the point where he's at right now. Unfortunately,
exactly.
We want to get to that point. We want to get to the point where racism is a non-issue, but we're not there because we're not really dealing with the issue right now. I think I'd have to disagree with it.
Exactly. I think what he was doing was he was trying to start something in the sense of let's stop this, and I'm going to start with you. But I don't think Mike Wallace was going to agree with that. What do you think, Brian?
Hello?
I don't think that Mike Wallace is known for always having an opinion of the black community. But I think Morgan Freeman was being... he was trying to get them to think in the future or thinking logically of what it should be. But because of the world and this wicked country we live in, it's not that. And it's the same thing, Salita, you and I have always been talking about when it came to education. We always said that it shouldn't be black history. Like he just said, it should be American history, and we should be included in the American history. When they also teach American history, they teach about what happened before their forefathers came to these shores.
Exactly.
Because it's a part of the heritage and the culture of the people. But when it comes to us, we're wiped out. We're only in a few numbers. And the same thing happens when it comes to this presidency. We are non-existent to white America and this government of America. We are now, if people don't see it, and the only way we can get out of this thing, we have to wake up and start doing something for self and stop all this finger pointing. He's not the one. She's not the one. I don't like him. He didn't say it like that. What is he doing? All that stuff causes conflict, and we're steady falling deeper into the hole because the government is not going to do right. Now, some people say, well, don't look for a handout. It's not a handout. We are due reparations for the evil atrocities that happened to our foreparents that trickled down economics all the way to us today. We don't even know what wealth is. I watch TV shows all the time where folks are spending $2,000-$3,000 on little items, and my son and I look at it and I said, son, we don't even know what wealth is. They know what wealth is because they accumulate wealth. Why? Because they had 400 plus years to get ahead of the ball game before we got started.
Exactly.
So if our people would just wake up to see that we cannot play in that arena as a whole. Yeah, sure, you got a few of us that can, but a few is not going to help the mass of black people.
No, no, nope. You're right. You're right. You're definitely right about that. So
I keep thinking about this this skit that Dave Chappelle put on, where they did give reparations to black folks, and I keep thinking about something that was said that a fool and his money was doing part. So even if they did give reparations, I fear that what we would end up doing is giving right back to the same people who make more money off of us.
Exactly. That's exactly
going to
happen. You are right.
It's one of the biggest problems that I see is that there's a place called DLRR around here. You get the first of the month, the line for people getting tennis shoes out the back door.
Yeah.
People waiting for the latest tennis shoes. They're running down the latest tennis shoes. They would buy the baddest cars, the biggest homes, and I realize, you know, in order to, not only is it to accumulate wealth, it's just as stressful as far as trying to maintain it. That's a learn. That's something that has to be learned. It can't be just given. So I feel that.
Okay. So do you think society has a lot to do with that?
Huh?
Can you hear me? I said, do you think society has a lot to do with that?
I think that there's an educational level that is different. I only can have an opinion about that, but I just think that there's an educational. I mean, I'd be the first to admit that I wouldn't go with money. You know, when I first came out, I realized that, you know, what are you doing? You know, interest rates, things like that, and things that are not taught to you, and how things work and how they don't work. And based on this system, Lisa, I personally don't like it, but this is the system that we live in. So you have to, you know, somebody has to pull you along, or you go to school, or you luckily you go to the right school, and maybe learn about those things and stuff like that, and how to handle money, and how to make money, accumulate wealth. But again, like I said, it's not a thing where we can really buy our way out of equality. You can't buy equality. I think that's what a lot of people in the black neighborhoods do. They go buy fancy things to quantify their importance. Because I don't know of other folks that go to run and buy tennis shoes, $100, $200 tennis shoes, for self worth, to make themselves feel important, make themselves feel better. You don't buy your way out of it. No, there's you have to work on someone's mentality, and that's something that's quite different. You know, you just can't buy your way to equality. It's not, we can talk about green power, but I don't think that would really get us there. I think that we would just lose our shirts again, and we're just giving right back to the stock market, Wall Street, General Motors, Cadillac, whoever, you know, Ford, whoever. We'd end up giving it to them, they would win, you know. So I think that's what our biggest problem is. And like I said, it's this thing right now. I mean, there's something very, I can't even call it, but it's something that we just right now, we've learned to master the trivial. You know, we've learned to watch a video, and then we think that we're supposed to do what we see in a video. You know, we're supposed to buy Gucci, Prada, we buy all this expensive stuff, we make other people rich, and we don't have anything to show for it. You know,
exactly.
I think I'm pulling money with a card from it. It wouldn't matter, you know.
You know, I think that. Go ahead, Salid. I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say, I think that, you know, we really look at the whole big picture. Speaking of equality, I truly don't feel it would ever happen. That's why I truly feel that the bottom line that we were going to have to separate. And, you know, people need to understand when we say separate, we're not talking about going in no woods, chopping no trees down, starting from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
We built this place. Enough blood and sweat went into building this country. We are due a piece of this land. We are due a piece of this land with an outlet to the sea.
Mm-hmm.
We are due fertile land. And we should be able to run our own society and country without infiltration of our enemy. That doesn't mean you can't do business with him, but what it does mean is that he needs to mind his own business. Because it's been, look how many years we've been trying to do, we're trying to do right with him, by him. And it just hasn't happened. I mean, I don't know if it takes what it takes, a rocket scientist or something to prove, but, I mean, we've been beat every day by the police. You know, why is it most of these beatings, I said 99% of the beatings we see, now, we don't see black cops beating white folks. We see white cops beating black folks and white cops beating some white folks. Mm-hmm. But yet still, they always being acquitted. We say videos don't lie. But in the judge's eyes, they must do. So the only way I see out this thing is that you don't see any task force coming from the federal government. Obama hasn't sent anything down on these things. I mean, they're coming out every day, how people are getting beat down. I mean, simple things that are affecting our families, our everyday lives, our livelihood. They're set for life. His family's set for life. His girls don't have to worry about a thing in the world for the rest of their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but folks like us, we still got our children and our grands coming up. We're going to have to struggle. Mm-hmm. It's a struggle out here.
Yeah. You guys, I'm trying to get Mr. Dean from the Dino Dean Show. I'm trying to get him to call in. I know he's listening. I just gave you the number. I want you to call in because I know you got some good stuff to say. Him and I think his name is Into Knowledge. I gave the number on the chat room, so you guys call in. We want to hear what you got to say. Go ahead.
But, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, when you touch the subject of the presidency and our plight here in America, we have a long way to go. Yeah, we've made some strides, but we have a long way to go. We can't even come together with the wealth that we have.
Yeah.
Economically, we can't come together to do anything.
Exactly.
Or I won't say we can't. We won't come together to do anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Willie Lynch did a job. And eventually, we all know about it, so somebody got to break the cycle.
Well, I think with even the breaking of the cycle is going to be the next challenge. Me and you, we try to, on our show all the time, try to break the cycle, and it still amazes me. No, it really doesn't amaze me because I can understand when it comes to the education level of a lot of people, they are not over third grade. So they don't comprehend the things that they need to, and they're waiting for someone to tell them because they're so used to people telling them what to do. That's what they do. They wait for somebody to tell them it's all right to
you. But exactly all the distractions that are out there, too, that our people have a tendency, like, so we master the trivial, so. Education and books and learning and things like that are not as attractive as one of those shows about reality TV, MTV, VH1, BET. So those things right there, even with the people that I consider that I have to love and everything else, or even football, the sports and things like that, we all have our vices, the things that we pass our time with, but some of us more than not would rather watch those things than really take into consideration these factors of reality. So those things are outlets for them, and sometimes I think that, again, like too much of anything is a bad thing. But we have so many different vices that we'd rather be into rather than deal with the situation at hand. And unfortunately, like I said, I've been a part of quite a few groups, and in all honesty, I became kind of disenfranchised with a lot of it too, you know, so. You know, with groups that did not, you know, I call them revolutionaries because they never really did anything. What are we doing? You know, we're meeting. We're not doing anything. That's well, you know, what we need to do to keep driving. What we need to keep motivated. I say that, you know, if it's, you know, I I would say that, like I said again, that was my disenfranchisement about the whole thing. Maybe other people have other opinions about it, but I kind of grown tired of waiting on people and say, well, you know, if you're not going to do it, I'm going to have to keep moving and keep, you know, doing what I need to do. Maybe I need to start at home for, you know, as far as there, you know what I'm saying? So that's what I think.
You know, when we speak of education level, I think we need to look at that thing called education. Mm-hmm. Our education is of who is the teacher.
Yeah.
The education that we have, and Salid, I think you know this better than anybody firsthand, is that we've been taught in a system, a college system, a secondary education system, a primary education system. We're not being taught self. We're being taught to be a good slave, and we don't even realize. We've been indoctrinated into the white man's thinking. I mean, that's just the way it is. We are not taught self-preservation, preservation of your family. You're taught to go get an education for his liking,
mm-hmm.
so that you can go get a job.
Mm-hmm.
This
I'm
is where it's taught. And you know, now, for sure, in school, the things that they're teaching, and especially college classrooms, because they can get straight in your face, is total contrary to what we should be teaching our people.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that becomes a breakdown in the family, a breakdown in the mm-hmm. community. Because it's total
exactly.
opposite of what we should be doing.
Yeah. Hey, we got 708 calling in. 708, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, how are
Hello.
You, sir?
Hello. I'm doing fantastic. First, I'd like to say you have a fantastic show, and your callers are just phenomenal. I'm just sitting here, got my learning cap on, and I love to learn as much as I like to teach. So I'm just having a fantastic time listening to the show, and I'm going to definitely be tuning in more often. But what I wanted to share was this, and I wanted to piggyback off the Barack Obama piece.
Mm-hmm.
And me personally, I am so disappointed in President Barack Obama because I have to bear witness that originally when he first ran, I had real high hopes for things that he may do for the community. But I kind of went away from what I already knew, and I already know that the presidency is nothing more than an institution and that all presidents are puppets. But for some reason, I got caught up into the hype and the hoopla myself, and really it's business as usual. And when our people finally come to the realization, and not just our people, all Americans come to the realization that America is really not a democracy, it's a corporatocracy. That corporate America runs everything, and basically all these presidents are nothing more than the front man doing the bidding for these corporate entities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're totally right about that. Now, okay, so do you think we have a chance, a smidgen of a chance to make it better for all of us if we come together? Do you think we have that? How do you say that? Yeah, that chance of making it better so that all of us can
well,
that's going to help us?
Well, one thing that I like to say is this. The thing that would really bring everything full circle, in my humble opinion, is if we practice group economics, if we learn how to support each other's businesses, and we have these shows all over the country about what's going on in Black America. I don't see any Chinese people with a Chinese show talking about how bad things are going in the Chinese community. That's because they practice group economics. And there's a Chinatown in every major city across this country. They shop with one another. They support one another. And that's one thing that I think can bring us back to a place where we were before integration. Because I believe that integration was probably the worst thing that ever happened to our communities. We have thriving communities before integration because we had to. We were excluded from other businesses, so we had to have our own businesses, and we supported those businesses. But once we got it, I'll give you a prime example. Facebook, prime example. And what I mean by Facebook is when Facebook was exclusive to those in college,
yeah,
everybody wanted to get in. I got to get in. I have to get in on this Facebook. And when they opened up Facebook to the masses, it was a wrap. The man became a billionaire overnight. Same thing with these white businesses. We were excluded so long that when somebody who didn't even respect our humanity said, I'll take the money now, we were all in, and we watched our own businesses fall by the wayside. So I believe that group economics is one of the key elements that will get our communities back on track, as well as education. Because if you notice, they're more affluent communities, you don't see the crime. And that's black or white. You go to a middle-class black neighborhood, you don't see the foolishness.
Can I add something to that? This is Brian again. And just to bear witness to what the brother just said, you know, if you look back on Dr. King, when he fought for equality. He didn't fight for integration. But the government officials came to him and told him that he could never get equality. So the best thing to do is to integrate so you can get what white folks are getting. Now, the mindset of a slave is just that, the mind of a slave. It's not the mind of a free man. Remember, we were so-called set free, but never got a re-education of who we were and who we are, not until Elijah Muhammad came around. Now, I'm going to give you an example of a personal thing that happened. My family in Salida knows this story. My family here in the city we're in, the city is, if you add the little town next to it, is right a little over 50-some thousand people. Started the first black-owned beauty supply in this area. You could not get black hair care products unless you came through us because there no other store existed. Yeah, you had a little bit here and there at Walmart, but for the most part, we carried a little bit of everything you can think of, introduced all kind of new products to the area, all kind of trends, blah, blah, blah. Went for a good ride. It went a long time. We were the only game in town. Well, found out eventually the Koreans got a whiff of it that, you know, they making money in that. Now, this has always been going on. We heard about it happening in other cities where the black beauty supplies were being ran out. Koreans were coming in, but they never came into our city. I'm going to show you how these people network, and we don't do it. We always want to be fair. Sometimes it's some of the stupidest things we do is talking about being fair. One of the big Koreans that were real wealthy would go to the black companies and buy up a lot of product. He didn't sell to the public. He only sold to stores. So the black companies would raise their minimum so high that the smaller black suppliers then could not afford to go and buy from them. So they would go buy from the big rack company, which is the big Korean, and he would buy. He then would tell his Korean brothers, they're selling X amount of dollars in this city. Y'all need to go set up. He would then go and give them products to get their business going on credit. They would undercut the black supplier because he would give them a better price. And in some cases, they didn't undercut, but they knew the weak mind of black people. So when the Koreans, who couldn't speak our language, who followed us around the stores, who treated us like dirt, who dogged us out, just like the white man, we would go to their store because we like being treated bad. Our poor black beauty supplier, who been working, doing this all this time now, is losing business. They're having trouble keeping the doors open. Eventually, they go out. Now the Korean supply in those cities are the only game in town. So when it came to my family, we had four stores, the first black-owned store in the big mall here in the city, four different locations. They hadn't come to our city. We couldn't figure out why. Well, we were fortunate enough where we were still ordering through the companies. We had enough going, we didn't have to go through this big rack jar. then it started coming down to where the companies raised it up to a certain point where you couldn't almost help it. So eventually a few of the words came down and a few of them started trickling into the city. We were told by our local people here they're cheaper than y'all. So my father, the person he is, he sent us out. We were spies. Go out and see what kind of prices they got. We actually went out and found out, one of the ladies who left out, that they were 5 cents higher than we were, but they were still buying it. The problem is that a lot of times black people with that slave mentality we have, with that crab syndrome that we have in our mind, we are our worst enemy. Whites will support whites. Koreans will support Koreans. Chinese will support Chinese. But black people will support everybody but black people. And that mindset has to change, because what happens is we are the biggest employers of our own people, whether we know it or not. And more of our businesses that go out, the less our people get employed. And look at our unemployment rate compared to anybody else's. It's in our face, but a lot of us won't wake up to it.
Yep.
A lot of us just won't wake up to it. So what is our way out? You know, a lot. I was telling people this the other day, you know, there is a plan out there. You don't have to change your religion to work with a doable plan. And I'm telling people, they can show me a better mousetrap, show it to me. But so far, the only plan I see right now is the one that Minister Farrakhan has out. He's not telling you got to change your religion. But it is showing there's a plan out there where we can do for self and we can network and come together. But our people got to start listening and stop getting off it. Well, that's a Muslim thing. They're terrorists. All that stupidity. That's what they want you to say.
It's an ignorance. It's a major ignorance they have toward Muslims or, you know. My thing is, if there's a way we can do this, let's do it. Let's make this happen. Mr. Dean, I have a question for you. Do you think that this is possible? Is it literally possible, physically possible, that we can come together? Or is it too late?
I don't think it's too late, and this is why I don't believe it is too late, because black people tend to galvanize when our feet are in the fire, and our feet are about to be in the fire. And you look at some of the things that are about to come down from the federal government with this immigration reform, another thing that President Barack Obama is supporting, and hopefully it will never happen, because listening to the fantastic Dr. Claude Anderson, he stated years ago that this would be our death knell, that when the illegal immigrants in this country come aboard and our numbers dwindle, when we used to be the number two, quote-unquote, minority, which we aren't the minority, but in this nation, the number two minority, when we got to number three and then dipped to number four, it would be a wrap. That's what he stated. But when our feet really hit that fire, and there's a lot of little things that's going on, little small things around the country. People on public aid, they're going to start drug testing them. That's going to be another way that they're going to take black people out of the system, some black people rather. And when our feet really get to the fire and them, and the meal cramp set in, we're going to have to work together or perish. So I believe that we will work together before we perish, because sometimes, and it seems to me, just looking at our history in this country, that when it was at its bleakest is when we came together. And I think it's said that it has to come to the point where it becomes extremely bleak. But it's right around the corner, family, so strap in and get ready for it.
You're totally correct in your words, because Elijah Muhammad said when the people get 80% dissatisfied, you start seeing an 80% response. But until they come to that point, it's gonna happen the way it happens. And you, just what you said, when that our feet hit the fire and we start feeling those hunger pains, it's gonna make us come together.
Absolutely. I agree with you, brother.
That's what is going to make us come together.
Because what's going to happen is it's going to trickle down. And it's eventually all these people that think that they're not, my stuff is together. I got it. But when it starts hitting their pockets, they're going to have a whole different ballgame when they can't go to the store and buy the things that they need.
And, you know, Salita, just like I said, I look at this deal here. I have my son and my daughter are college graduates. Couldn't find jobs. Every time they put applications in, they were overqualified. So my son and I talked. He said, well, Dad, I'm going to just put in some application. I'm going to lie and say I don't have a college degree. As soon as he did, they got three job offers.
Man.
His wife still put in, she had a degree, she couldn't get a job. As soon as she finally didn't do it, she got two job offers. He said, Dad, it's like they don't want to hire you, you know, if you got a degree. If you don't have a degree, they don't want to pay you much. So, you know, I've come to the conclusion, I was telling them, I have other children coming out of school, I have to do something so that they can be self-sufficient. I have to do something so that they can do for self. Because they're not going to have, there's no jobs out there for the black folks. Not that there's no jobs. And there's nothing that this president is doing that can help our situation. He's catered to the gays and lesbians. He's catered to certain things in the Latino community. He's definitely been catering to the white community. And let's not speak of corporate white America.
Mm-hmm.
But what has he done for the least, the moral thing for any person to me is those that are poor and the indigent.
And let me just interject briefly, brother. Let me just interject briefly. And not to only just mention that, those that were most loyal to you in your election.
Mm-hmm.
I look at a vote as a payment. I don't vote for you to not get anything from my vote.
That's right.
That's what's blowing me away. Those who were most loyal to you and are still loyal to you and view you as and put you in almost of making this man a deity. But when it's all said and done, in my humble opinion, his legacy with our people is going to be a very dark one. Because one thing about history is it never lies. And when history shows that he did nothing for his own, and let me just say this briefly. I'm going to give the floor back to you, brother. I was speaking to a Mexican gentleman that I work with, and we talked pretty frankly, and I asked him a question. I said, the day that there's a Hispanic president, Mexican specifically, would you expect that president to do something for Mexicans specifically? And he said, of course. Who wouldn't do something for their own people? And I said, Barack Obama.
Sure right.
Well, when you think about that, think about the ideal that he went to Morehouse and talked down to the people at Morehouse and then went to the white college and spoke to them with glory and praises.
And not only that, sister, I'm going to interject one more time. I heard that speech in its entirety. I listened to it on YouTube, and I really didn't have a problem with what he said to those young men. He was speaking reality to them. But what blew me away is when he used it as a platform to push the gay agenda again. When he told those young men to sit up and be good boyfriends to your boyfriends, I said, there you go. He told them, and I want you to look at it on YouTube. He said, be good husbands to your wives. And he also said, and be good boyfriends to your boyfriends. So, and I'm just paraphrasing. He's pushing that homosexual agenda so viciously. And really, if you want to break down the whole homosexual agenda, it's nothing more than genocide and population control.
That's all it is. That's all it is.
Yep.
And, you know, you look at this, you have a president that's more concerned about rights for people's sexual orientation than he is for the preservation of his so-called own people. And some people may say, well, you remember he's half white. Well, they only want to use that half white deal because they know his mom is white. We never had that problem in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody who's had a parent was black.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody who had a parent in the back was black.
Okay, I got six seconds. 678, he's been trying to get in. Go ahead, Into Knowledge.
Yes, and what I'd like to do before I say anything, I would just like to commend all of you on your excellent knowledge of the history of this country and the way you approach the subject and how you do it respectfully. And I'm supremely impressed with all of you and how you deal with what's going on. Now, with that being said, might hurt some feelings, okay, but I'm not gonna say anything derogatory or anything like that. Now, when we get into the historical aspect of humanity and the way that things are run and how things are done, and you guys have actually been talking about this without really talking about it, when we're talking about Barack Obama and him not really addressing, and this has been my issue with him, he doesn't address the black issue when every president prior to him has to address it. He doesn't have to take a side, but he has to acknowledge that there is an issue with the black community, and he doesn't do that. Now, if we go back in history, Barack Obama, the first time he got a job in politics was with Henry Kissinger. Now, if you know Henry Kissinger's past, he's a part of secret societies. He's a part of the Trilateral Commission. He's a part of all the entities. And
Bilderberger Group.
Thank you. And this is an 18-year-old. This was his first job. So when we look at Barack today and we understand what's going on, he's, you know, and this is where me and my mother argue over this. He's just a president. He's the same as all of them. Politics doesn't change. Latin word for politics, politics. That means that there's ticks and there's a whole bunch of them. The word sewer, and the word sewer is Latin for the word system. So if you live in a system, it's related to a sewer. Now, the whole point in me bringing that up is, and I just want to keep it real short, because you guys are just expounding on so many things that are so important. And I'm gonna relate it just like this, real succinct. You look at the Trayvon Martin case, which I'm following that for syndicatednews.net, and I try to connect the dots, and I try to get people to understand how this is related to Edward Snowden, and people don't even see the connection. Now, the connection is, when you go back to 9/11, Oklahoma City, Columbine, all that, they're channeling us into a totalitarian government, a police state. And we need to have examples of what's going on in terms of how we are going to judicially administer this whole thing. Now, how does that relate to the black community? Oh, well, here's how it relates to it. When you look at the Rodney King incident, OJ, Trayvon Martin, I know y'all see a connection. There's a connection there. And nobody is really, they're looking at them separately. Oh, well, with the OJ thing, it was this. Oh, well, with the Trayvon thing, it was this. No, they're all connected. And what they're doing is they are leading us into a new frontier. And not to get into the whole biblical thing about end times and all that, holographically, that's the new technology. Because the new technology in the world today is science, and technology. That's the new religion. That they got us all tied into the grid. Everybody on this phone right now, either you got a cell phone or you got an iPad or you got a desktop or you got a laptop or you got a Kindle. You're in the grid. So we got you. And my whole point in bringing all that up is that as black folks, we get caught up into the racial element of everything. And that's not even what it's about. The people who are on the top of the pyramid, they don't give a shit about racism. I'm sorry. I probably said the wrong word. They don't give anything about racism because, you know what? The head of the UN, isn't he black? Germany has their first chancellor that's female. And guess who's coming behind Barack Obama? And this is my prediction. Hillary Clinton.
I don't think Hillary's coming, but that's another story. I don't think Hillary's coming. But go ahead, brother.
Okay.
I'm listening to you.
Oh, okay. But I'm just to sum it up, you guys have covered a wide variety of subjects, and I can't even expound on those, but at the same time, I appreciate what y'all are doing. Extremely intellectual, extremely insightful, and I just feel blessed to just be part of the conversation. Let me just jump in briefly, brother.
May I please jump in just briefly?
Sure.
I'm glad the brother brought up all those aspects because that is an aspect that we really do not look at. We don't look at it from the conspiracy theory perspective, even though I don't believe it's conspiracy theory. I believe it's conspiracy fact. And they were really telling you from the very jump, WWW, World Wide Web, what do webs do? They trap things.
There it is.
And if you look at everything from a metaphysical standpoint, you can see how and the NSA piece was proven that they are spying on everybody. Big Brother is here, no doubt. Big Brother is here, and Big Brother is going to use Xboxes. Big Brother is going to use these new television technologies. Big Brother's going to use it all to spy on us.
All you got to do is plug in. You already tied to it. Once you log in, you're done.
Oh, no doubt. And do you remember the old conspiracy theory that everybody was going to be implanted with a microchip? Do you remember that?
Yes, the RFID chip.
Well, I tell everybody right now, you already got your chip. It's your cell phone, and you pay for your chip. You love your chip. You caress your chip. You can't. If you leave your chip at home, you're going back to get your chip.
That's real talk. That's real talk. He's telling the truth. You done.
I know I do it.
Let me add something to that. I agree with almost everything the brothers said, but the fact still stands that no matter where our people are in this world, there are always elements on the other side that has the arrow pointed at black people. They know what a lot of our people don't know. They know there's going to be a time where they can't stop the rise of people. That's why you have this genocide going on. That's why you have this gay lesbian thing where they're pushing folks up. And not only that, folks, think about this. We're not created as something being wrong with us. We scratch our head trying to figure out what we are. It's two elements that's hurting, that's hindering us and other people. They're putting things in the food, and they're also teaching it from the media.
Right.
They're putting stuff in the food, and these things are
altering our normal path of thinking and
right.
our thought process of the mind. We you know, they say, oh, little girls are getting breasts before that time. Well, then that means little boys, either things are going bigger or smaller than them too. It's not just affecting girls. So it's also those type of things. That's why we have to also go beyond this presidency. We got to get into the food factor. This GMO,
right.
genetically modified crap that they sinking in, these colorful foods, all this stuff, this stuff you're buying on, sticking in the oven, and presto, you got a food in 5 minutes. We better wake up, because this stuff is messing with us big time. I was in the store the other day, and I was watching this lady, and 99% of the stuff she had in her basket was that ready-made stuff that don't take but a few minutes to eat. And she said she's making groceries.
Right. And just to piggyback on, and just to piggyback on what you were saying, when I was in my early 20s, I worked for the USDA, Meat and Poultry Inspection. So I got
wow.
a chance to go to plants and see what they were doing. This was back in the 80s. I saw what they were doing. And I didn't tell nobody. And I got out of government work. My mother worked for the Department of the Navy as a civilian for over 30 years. And she was involved with high-level people, and she was just getting – her thing was just getting artifacts all over the country, all over the world. So she was getting stuff from China, and then she would just show up at the house and have all this furniture. And she was the one that got me into working for the government. And then I started off with the Office of Personnel Management, which is a branch of how people get hired. And then I became a test examiner. I was 23 years old. I was giving examinations for people who wanted to be in the Foreign Service, who wanted to be U.S. attorneys. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I had no idea what I was involved in. And then I realized that people started talking to me on the street, people I didn't even know. And they were like, hey, have you ever heard about the Church of Scientology? I was 22 years old, and I got stopped on the street, and somebody asked me about the Church of Scientology, and you hear about that now with Tom Cruise and all the actors and all that. Man, I was hearing about that back in the 80s, and I was like, man, I got to get out of this. I really don't want to have nothing to do with this. So based on what you were just saying, we, as black people, we don't really understand the game that's being played. It's a game. It's being played. It's being played on us, and we have to get educated. We cannot sit here and listen to rap and listen to all this nonsense and
that's
get
right.
into all of these shows. Oh, Housewives of Atlanta, and, you know, I'm from the Bay Area. And when I came to Atlanta and I saw the Housewives of Atlanta, I was just like, are you serious? And here's what killed me is that the females loved the show, and they didn't even realize how they were being played, like total idiots. You're idiots. How the hell can you have that much money and you sitting here fighting with somebody in a restaurant? Really?
Yeah, absolutely, brother. And just let me interject just briefly. That's why it's called television programming, because it programs the minds of those who are watching. It is the same way you can program a computer, you can program somebody's brain, and they will internalize and put it into their subconscious, and they will eventually act that out at a later date. But also I wanted to say this briefly as well, talking about the food. To everybody in the listening audience, I don't know those of you who may not know this, some may know this. Soy, which has been introduced into our diets, particularly into the infant formulas, is an estrogen-based plant. So when you are giving that newborn boy who's trying to get that testosterone going, and you're flooding him with that estrogen, you're actually chemically throwing that boy off balance, and you are bringing these girls into maturation much too fast. And my last point is, and I don't want to ask the brother, the other brother who was, what's your name, brother, who was on before I was? What's your name, sir?
Into knowledge.
Brother, are you
Patrick.
In the Nation of Islam?
My name is Patrick. My name is Patrick.
Patrick, are you in the Nation of Islam?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I am.
Okay. And the reason why I asked that, because the brother brought up Scientology. And why is Minister Farrakhan introducing Scientology into the mosque and making everybody become voyeurs that are in the higher upper echelon of the nation?
Money.
Let me answer that for you.
Yes, sir.
Uh-oh.
Minister,
here we go.
The man's explain is...
Shut it up.
I'm sorry, y'all. And the point is that I don't want people to take this wrong. We ask, and the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad told us that we should study our enemy. We should also take some of the good that he has and put it into good works. Now, we talk about how bad white folks are and the things they do to us and how they treat us. But we tell all our children, as many as we can, go to their universities. Am I correct?
Yeah.
We learn under them.
Yeah.
We go to their elementary schools. We go to their high schools, their junior high schools, their preschools, their daycare centers. We go even to their churches.
Yep.
And that's fine. We're integrated. Now, within their school systems, there are some good things in that system. It's not all bad. But we have to know how to go in and take the good and not take it all as a whole, but take good things out of the bad. Now, within that system that they have, not the Church of Scientology, but a system that they have for people with certain problems, they have a good element in there that helps people with certain problems. It's not teaching people to be a Scientologist or go into the religion. We are the Nation of Islam. It's just like there may be some good elements in a Christian religion. We're not telling people to go in and to be a Christian. But because there's something good in it, we're not going to just go and cast out the baby with the bathwater. I can dissect it and take the good out of it. And that's all that he did. A person would be a fool not to reach into dirty, nasty sewage water and pull the diamond out of it. If that's the way I can explain it. Not that I'm calling Scientology nasty, dirty bathwater, but my point is, I can reach into those no good universities and pull the good out of it, but that don't mean I go with the full scope of the university. The same thing with Scientology. And I think if people can take that and learn from that, we do it every day. Most of us have been through it ourselves, or we have children or some loved one that's in the white man's system, and we're telling them to go, and we're paying for them to go. Am I correct?
Yes, you are. Let me ask this brother this question. Let me ask this question based on how I was raised. I was always in gifted classes, and I always got pushed in the direction of, you know, you're going to get pushed into this class. I didn't understand it because I was too young. I was doing this. When they were pushing me in this, I was like 8, 9 years old. And that was when, this is back in the 60s, the Renaissance period, when they were just testing you. They were just trying to figure out who was who. And all of a sudden, I got pushed in all these advanced classes. Now, I was able to hold my own in the classes, but because I didn't have proper representation in the class, meaning there was nobody that I could identify with. I purposely flunked out. I didn't flunk out because I couldn't handle my own academically. I flunked out because I didn't feel like that I fit in. Now, fast forward. Once I go to high school, I'm an academic All-American. I'm playing football. I'm just realizing that, oh, the world is open to me. And just to bring it home, I didn't really understand what the hell was going on because it was too much stuff coming at me at one time. I was not as gifted as LeBron James. I was not as gifted as, you know, I couldn't, there was nothing specifically I could concentrate on. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because we have so many black children who are exceptional intellectually. And then what made it so funny was that when I dropped out of college, I got a government job. And then all of a sudden I was working for the government. And I was right next door to the CIA, the FBI. I'm talking about back in the 80s. I was right next door to the CIA, the FBI. I'm in the stairways snorting coke with FBI people.
Now, you're not an informant, are you, brother?
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. I'm being honest about what I'm saying. Is that I had access to everything, and I didn't know how to bring it all together. I wasn't sophisticated enough to have that access. Yeah, I had partners in the CIA. I had partners in the FBI. Yeah, we were sitting in the stairway at 450 Golden Gate in San Francisco, the federal building, and getting knocked up, you know, in terms of the whole drug thing. Now, I didn't get caught up in it, okay? I was just doing it because, hey, it was lovely. But then when I got out of it, I saw how the whole thing was following me. So I just want to hear you guys, opinion on how, you know, us black people, where we are in those positions to where they know you're going to make a difference, just like the young lady that's on the phone right now. She's going to make a difference. Everybody on this phone right now is going to make a difference. However, in the fact that you can make the difference, is there something or somebody that can steer you away from the path? And I'll drop back and listen.
I'll take what he was just talking about. I believe that we all have weaknesses, and definitely people can be taken off the path. But at the same token, I believe that when a person is mature somewhat, that some of the childish things that you dealt with in the past, you leave in the past. Mm-hmm. And I do want to make a difference for our people. And I want to make a difference for my family. I want to make a difference for the people on my block. And that's one of the reasons why I listen to shows like this. And this is one reason why I have the show that I have. And this is one of the reasons why I talk extensively about group economics. Because group economics, believe it or not, is going to be one of the things that's going to save our communities and stop the violence. Because you can go to a ghetto in Warsaw, Poland, and they buck wild. You can go to a ghetto in London. You can go to any white ghetto, and they buck wild.
Real talk.
Versus just looking at our ghettos. Go ahead, sister. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. I got 540. Let me see if they're still there. Hello, 540?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, peace. Yeah, I turned in kind of late on here. I just jumped on Facebook. This is Tajuddin Shabazz Allah representing Fredericksburg, Virginia. I was just making a comment. Hey, this is what we need. We need to put out information, and again, that's our job, is to educate the masses. So you all keep doing what you're doing.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you, brother.
All right. Y'all have a blessed night. Peace.
You too, brother. Peace.
Bye-bye. Okay. Oh,
you know,
all right. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that we have to, and it's good to have dialogue, because sometimes a lot of talk is done among certain people, and they may not come in contact and receive the right answers. But, you know, a lot of time when things are done, we have to search for the correct, for the answer. And to search for the answer, a lot of times is not listening to just the propaganda that's out there, listening to the haters, or listening to those. Because I can tell you, I can be around, and Salida and I can both attest to this, if we just listen to the haters all day in our neighborhood, we think that we were the worst people in the world.
Yeah.
If we listen to what's being said in our cities about black people, we think that we're the worst thing that hit the face of the earth. And I say that to say that a lot of times when our organizations and things do things, they are all, in most cases, explanations for what they do. I'm not saying all explanations are good now, but a lot of times we have to find out what's going on, so that we can make an intelligent decision, and so that when we carry on a new conversation, we can have something of some kind of a substance that goes with it, not just the jibber-jabber that a lot of time people get. You know, a lot of people are now talking about the Paula Deen issue, you know.
Ooh.
And
ooh.
I didn't hear President Obama come out and say anything on that. He wants he congratulated the gay man for coming out basketball saying he was gay. Why didn't he come out and say anything about Paula Deen? You know.
He's not gonna say nothing about that.
I'm being funny, but you notice how, you know, those type of things, people want to be quiet. I was in one of the white groups on Facebook, and I told them, I said, you know, it amazes me how when I put up these certain things that go on in our communities in this United States, if it's a black thing, y'all all quiet. But as soon as one of you pop up with something that you can say, oh, see what they done, I say, y'all hit it like fleas on a dog. You know, but when it's showing you guys what you truly are, everybody's quiet. I say, that's what they're saying. But can't we all just get along? Kind of speaking around.
Hell no. We ain't all get along. No.
And I tell them, I say, well, you know, look at this thing. You only want to get along when we can put the spotlight on you to show that you were wrong. But when you see that your people are wrong, you all get quiet and you turn your head. So until you stand up against total injustice, Not just speaking of something to make somebody feel good, it's never going to be right. That's why I say that we need to separate. That's my point.
We need to separate? Wait, define that. We need
my
separate
definition
how?
To separate is that we need a piece of land right here in these so-called United States that our people already built, with public transportation, with sewage, with water, with lights, with gas, with an outlet to the sea, with fertile land, that we can build a nation for ourselves. We also, this government owes us at least 25 years of financial support for the sweat and blood until we can get on our own feet so we can start our own nation and be independent of them meddling into our affairs. Now, that doesn't mean
you're talking about reparations, right? You're talking about reparations, right?
Well, some may call it reparation. I just call it equality.
Let me tell you why reparations doesn't work under the law, because slavery is a crime against humanity. That's an international law. The only reason why black people don't get reparations is because we haven't brought it to the world court. We're trying to get reparations through the United States, which they don't have the adjudication They can't do that. So if we're going to talk about reparations, we have to make that the same as what happened to the Jews in Germany in World War II. Those were war crimes. That means that you go to a war tribunal. That means that it's brought up on international law. We haven't done that. We're trying to get reparations through the United States. It'll never work. Now, if we take it to international law, then we'll get paid.
Well, let me interject as well, because I think that was a fantastic point that you just made about reparations on how it does have to go to the world court. And I'm going to give an example. I'm going to piggyback off what the brother just stated. And first of all, I'm going to ask a question. Why do you think that the country of Israel had to be created for the Jews? Does anybody have any idea?
Yes, I do.
I don't want to take
up your time. I want to let some other people talk, and then I'll chime in.
Okay, well, I will say this is the reason, because you have to come as a nation to the world court. They could not come to the world court as Jews. They had to come as Israelis. Because
right.
A world court will only speak to a country. That is the main reason why they needed a piece of land so they can get reparations from Germany.
Had nothing
to do with wanting to take anything from Palestine, because they were originally trying to take the land from Africa. They were trying to take it there. Then the United States and Britain took Palestine, gave it to the Jews. Then it became the country of Israel. Then they were able to go to the world court.
All right, let me give you some history. I'm gonna wait my turn. I want the young lady. I'm sorry, not young lady. She's probably a queen, a woman, and I want her to chime in, and then I'll chime in after that.
Let me say this. I'm learning. You guys are teaching me a lot. We got two more minutes. What I want to do is I want each and every one of you guys to tell me something before we close out this show. So we're only down to 2 minutes, down to 1:54. So, Mr.
Okay.
D, starting with you.
So, no. Oh, okay. I'll wait.
I want to start with Mr. D. Mr. D.
Well, first and foremost, I'm going to keep this brief. It's been a real pleasure this evening speaking with everybody and speaking to your listening audience. And I had a fantastic time because I love sharing knowledge and I love being taught. But I'm going to go back to what I talk about all the time, group economics family, because I'm going to quote the fantastic Dr. Claude Anderson. If we do not start practicing group economics, we will eventually be a permanent underclass in this country. That's why it's imperative.
Man, that's deep. That's deep. I like that. I want to thank you so much. I want to thank you so much for coming and listening to my show. You guys, this is like, Mr. Dean is like my hero when it comes to Blog Talk.
Oh, you got me blushing out there.
I'm sorry, you're an awesome speaker, and I love that. Oh, my God, I love that. And I thank you.
Thank you.
I feel so privileged that you came on my show. Sharing the knowledge that you have is an awesome thing. Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
678, what you got to say?
The only thing that I would like to say is that I appreciate everything that you guys are doing. I have much love for you. And when I go to sleep at night, I think of all of you, because you have a passion about this world and about what's going on. And if you can't share knowledge, then you don't know knowledge. And
exactly.
As the old saying goes, a wise man knows that he really knows nothing at all.
Thank you. Mr. Brian, we have run out, completely out of time. Mr. Brian, I'll talk to you in the morning, because you guys were going to be on the air tomorrow.
Yes, ma'am. I'd just like to real quick, I enjoyed the show, enjoyed the guests. Everyone has participated. You guys are a wealth of knowledge, and we definitely look forward to next time.
Awesome.